They did not appear to be emanating from the capsule. They appeared to have even distribution across on each side of the capsule. I thought of two things that they might be initially. One was observed them. We saw it on all three orbits about the same length of time at each sunrise. They were very luminous, a yellowish-green color. And as George Ruff, our psychiatrist, listened to this and said, "What did they say, John?" We had some problems during the flight. The automatic stabilization and control system was causing some difficulty. It didn't appear to be correcting up the way it should. Was able to use the manual control during that period, and this appeared to just didn't cause any trouble at all. It was seemed very natural to take over manual control after all of the trainer work we've done. Trainer simulations, incidentally, were very, very close to the orbital control situation. This was particularly true in the fly-by-wire mode where we control through the automatic thrusters. When we started having this problem at the end of the first orbit, I was largely on manual control from there on till the end of the flight. Some of the other observations we had planned to make had to go by the board while I tried to work out the control system problems. And we spent most of the last two orbits working on this, making some other observations, but largely concentrating probably 90% of the time on the control system.
Camera two, take three.
Ground, as most of you probably know, the ground telemetry receivers had picked up an impulse that we possibly had a loose heat shield. And for that reason, it was deemed advisable to keep the retro package in place during reentry so that it would go ahead and burn off, but by that time we would be in a high enough aerodynamic force field to keep the heat shield in place in case it was in fact loose. This made a pretty spectacular reentry from the capsule standpoint, because as the retro pack, as I retained the retro package and entered into the first part of the high heat area of the reentry, the straps on the retro pack broke loose, and I felt a bump on the capsule and thought that the retro package had jettisoned as it was supposed to do. Apparently this was not true, but I thought so at the time. As it went on into the higher heat pulse end, and this glow picked up outside the capsule to sort of a bright orange glow outside the window, it became apparent that something was tearing up on the heat shield end of the capsule, because there were large pieces from anywhere from pieces as big as the end of your finger to pieces probably 7 or 8 inches in diameter were breaking off and falling off the edge of the capsule and coming back up past the window, and were flaming very brightly. You could see the fire and the glow from them as they would come back up past the window. Well, this obviously was the retro package tearing up and breaking off as we knew it would if it had been retained. I thought at that time, however, that the retro package had already been jettisoned. So there were some moments of doubt there as to whether the heat shield had been damaged and whether it might be tearing up itself. And this could have been a bad day all the way around if that had been the case. But it was very spectacular looking out into this orange glow outside the window, bright orange glow, and seeing these big flaming chunks go back along the flight path. I understand there was some misconception also when we referred to this term blackout during reentry, and I was questioned aboard ship as to how I had survived the blackout when I regained consciousness and a few things like this. And this was, when we refer to blackout during reentry, a communications blackout is what we were referring to in this case. We probably should re-term this a comm loss or something like that so that we don't confuse it with a blackout of the astronaut involved. This is due to high ionization around the capsule and makes it impossible for the radio frequencies that we're using to get in and out from the capsule. G's during reentry got up to about 8. The parachute functioned completely normal fashion, and that's probably the prettiest little old sight you ever saw in your life, to look out the window and see that parachute. I remember Al Shepard making some comments about that after his flight, about how pretty that parachute was, and I concur. That's just about as pretty as anything you see at that point. The capsule was pretty warm after reentry, very hot, in fact, and it was getting very warm inside. I was sweating rather profusely when I came down and when I landed, so I remained as still as I could in the capsule, trying to add as little heat load to it as I possibly could. The destroyer NOAA was close by, had me spotted, and came over and made an excellent pickup of the capsule, came aboard, and at that time I had been heated up enough and had been sweating very profusely long enough that I decided, after taking the panel, the right side of the panel down, preparing to egress out through the top, I decided at that time, since we were already on deck, that it was hardly worth the effort and I should get on out and be comfortable, so I did. We blew the hatch on the side after checking to see that everyone was clear outside and came on out through the side hatch. I was not in such bad shape at that time that I could not have gotten out through the top if I had had to do it. I still could have come out through the top. But at that time I was hot, had been sweating for a long period of time, and it seemed like the thing to do to get on out of there at that time.
Camera 2, take 6.
I think perhaps the difficulties that we had and the action I had to take may actually have been a blessing in disguise in one way, because it showed when we had to that a man can take over control of the various systems, operate manually, still know what he's doing, not have any ill effects in this regard from zero G, and probably if sufficient study of our records from this flight warrants it, we probably can go on some future flights with considerably less automation and less complexity, we hope, as a result of some of the things that we learned on this flight. We certainly hope so anyway, but before we make any big decisions along that line, of course, we want to review a lot of the data much more thoroughly than we have so far. These things are all step-by-step items. Al, of course, added to our knowledge a large amount on his flight. Gus added more. I added a little more, I guess, on this one, and there will be many more to come. Deke Slayton, of course, is up next, and we're looking forward to that flight with just as eager anticipation for him as I look forward to this one for me. I think we've really hardly scratched the surface. We have a lot of attention focused on this right now, but our efforts really haven't gotten us very far into space, if you think about it. If you think of the diameter of the Earth being represented at some 100 miles to the inch, this would mean that the Earth's diameter could be represented by 80 inches approximately, which would only be about 10 inches higher than I am. If I held my hand up over my head, this would be of the order of 80 inches if I were standing up. Our orbital altitude, if that was the surface of the Earth and I was the diameter line of the Earth, our orbital altitude would be about 1 1/3 inches above that, 80 inches. So perhaps if you think of the enormity of space, it makes our efforts seem a tad puny at this time. But these are all step-by-step functions we go through. As we said, the flights, all the manned flights we've had to date have added information. This flight, I hope, added a little bit more, and there are more to come. We were interested, of course, in some of the reactions from abroad with regard to the flight. I think it's well to note in this regard that as far back as 1958, the president at that time, President Eisenhower, of course, proposed that we make joint efforts with other people in regards to our exploration of space, and these were largely ignored at the time. President Kennedy, shortly after his inauguration, or during his inauguration, in his address, I believe, reiterated this again, the desire for the peaceful exploration of space and peaceful cooperation in this regard. So we don't want to let this particular initiative, I don't think, be taken away from us. This has been proposed for quite some period of time by our own leaders in this country. I think I couldn't pass up any opportunity like this without rendering a great note of thanks to all the people here at the Cape and the whole Mercury network who performed so beautifully during the flight. They acted like a real bunch of pros, and it was real gratifying after our all the practice we had been through with them to see everyone come through as they did during the flight. Now, this goes from the blockhouse crew. I hate to start mentioning names because we just wouldn't know where to turn it off, and I'd hate to hurt anybody's feelings by missing them, so I won't start. But the blockhouse crew and the people at the hangar that checked out all the capsule and the boosters and the work on the pad, the range, the recovery efforts of the Navy, the Air Force support we had, it was just a big across-the-board team effort. It was, as I said earlier, I think almost a cross-cut of Americana, of all people in different walks combining together on a project, and we got the results we did. It makes you proud to be associated with people like that when everyone does work together so cooperatively.